Okay, good evening, and welcome to our regular scheduled board meeting for September 27th at 7 o'clock. If I can ask the clerk, please, to take the roll call.
Trustee Gillis?
Here.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
Trustee Johnson?
Here.
Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Medusi?
Here. Okay, very good. Thank you. If I can ask everyone to stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Okay, so we have one citizen comment, Phyllis. So, Phyllis, if you'd like to speak.
Hi, I guess I finally got it right. I was ready to and getting my name on there. Hi, I'm Phyllis Rubin. I live at 411 Ashland Avenue. I have two topics to talk about. And I get my questions from the residents here at the Chatterton condo. I asked them what they're concerned about. So this is about Lake and Lathrop. There is now a privacy, somebody's calling it a privacy fence. There's a barrier fence locked around the whole site coming out. I think it's probably doing this because this is where the driveway will be to the parking lot, but it's coming out between the buildings to the sidewalk on Ashland. So there's a question about why is it there? I might have just answered my own question, but I'm putting it out to the powers that be to give an answer to that, why it's coming out to the sidewalk on Ashland. Also, what does this mean? Does this mean it's now a construction site? The weeds have been mowed down to the ground. The sheeting is all around it. To protect most of it from view. And so we wonder what this means. I guess this is my question. If this means progress and they're actually going to start to break ground, should they inform residents that this is about to happen? We live right next door to it. It would be nice to know what's going on and not have to wait a month to come to you and find out. This might, another resident is saying, when are they going to start work? And then another question is, why is the amendment to the planned development been removed from the website? I believe it showed a requirement for completion November 1st, 2021. So that's gone from the website. What happened to it? And we know why, but what's going on with that? Also, there used to be listed the permits that were in process. Now, my understanding from the last meeting is they're all approved, but it doesn't say that. And if it's in all those sections, those five sections, I opened up one of them and I closed it right down because it looked like I wasn't going to be able to understand where to find the information I wanted. But if that's where it would be nice to know where that information is, like all the things completed, because that's not really in there anymore. So that's all my questions about Lake and Lathrop. I have one other comment, which is partially taken care of, about Memorial Parkway. On Saturday, I was walking from Monroe to Lathrop on the north side, right, of Lake Street by Memorial Parkway, which is the neatest little park. And I always carry, when I walk, a tote bag to pick up stuff. And there was a lot. I filled my tote bag. I'm not going to take it out to show you. And it might not be a surprise to you that it was stuff from the Jewel. It's their flyers. It's, I don't know what this is from, but it's not toilet paper, but it's, I have no idea what they do with this. But a lot of that stuff, there were receipts. And so I picked it up, not all of it because I had to get home, but I picked up a lot. So today I happened to be driving by, and there was a man there. I think it looked like he had a, you know, pick in his hand, and he had a big rolling bin, and I think he was doing the cleanup. So my question of the village is, what happens on the weekend? Does anybody clean it up? Should the Jewel be somewhat responsible for all this stuff in some way? I don't know. I know I sometimes walk on the south side along Central of Jewel, and that used to be a mess also. I think it last time I walked, which has been a while, that particular route, it was better. But this is probably typical around big stores like that, but it's, you know, I'm asking this question about what can the village do to make sure it's not a mess. Okay, that's really all. And I'm not gonna stay, and it's not because I'm not interested. It's because I have another meeting at the exact same time. My Go Plastic Free meeting. So I'm gonna go do that and I'll come back. And if Lake and Lathrop is done, I will then listen to the audio. Thanks everybody.
Okay. I don't think we have any other citizens' comments. So we'll move on to elected official comments and announcements. So we've got before we get into the elected official comments and the trustees liaison, we'll do ahead a recognition of retiring Public Works Superintendent Mark. I know, there you are, Mark.
I'm here, hi.
I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Sorry,
you're
Mark.
In good
that's
company.
Not something that this doesn't please me. Okay, this is funny. Love that.
All right, so as everyone is now aware, the village's superintendent of operations, Mark Giannopoulos, will be retiring later this week after 28 years with the village. Mark has been an integral part of the village staff over the years and has brought a vast knowledge of the village's parkway tree network and underground utilities to work with him on a daily basis. Mark started as a maintenance worker before working his way up to superintendent of operations in 2001. And in addition to managing the public works crews, he has played an important role in modernizing the department with initiatives like mixing and applying his own brine solution prior to snow events and helping to establish the scope of the upcoming AMI project. If anybody has any questions about the brine solution, I'm sure he'd love to talk to you for an hour or two after the meeting about it. His vast knowledge of the village's fleet and infrastructure have made him an invaluable member of the management team. Mark will be sorely missed by no one more than me, I can assure you all. But we wish him well in his retirement. And he's brought his wife, Joan, with him here this evening. And I know I speak for all of us when I say congratulations to you both. And thank you for loaning him to us all these years. And he's your problem now. So good luck. Come on up, Mark.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to have a career here in River Forth. It's a terrific community, one with solid leadership and a staff that's second to none. I've enjoyed my time here, and especially Rosie and Jeff, but I've enjoyed my time here, and it's gone by so quickly. Our world moves 100 miles an hour from the time we get there until we leave at the end of the day, and, you know, when you hit the pause button, you realize how much time has gone by, and then it's, you know, it's time to say, wait a minute, I need to do something for me. So that's where I'm at right now, and I've enjoyed serving the community and the folks here. The interdepartmental relationships that I've had with police and fire, it's just been outstanding. I mean, we've worked side by side through storms and floods and all different types of disasters. But, you know, the biggest thanks goes to my team down there at the Public Works Garage. You know, they're always there. They always get the job done. And, man, I've asked a lot of them through the years. And, they've always stepped up, and they've always gotten the job done. And Matt's here tonight. He's a member of the team, and, you know, I thank them greatly. And I'm going to miss all of you dearly. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We've got a little plaque to give you for the shovel.
That is great.
In recognition and appreciation of your dedication and service to the village of River Forth. I want to say thank you so much on behalf of us. I have no prepared marks other than only because I didn't want to do this. I didn't want you to retire. So, you know, you are just so great. And, you know, I think about the customer service of the demand that our residents put on all of you, you know, public works, police, fire. It's enormously intense. And you've always, you and your team have always stepped up professionally and quickly. So, I mean, that you make us, the board of trustees, and myself look really, really, really good. And so on behalf of the Village Board of Trustees, staff, I know Lisa is a big fan of yours, and all the staff is a big fan of yours. Thank you so much, Mark, for everything you've done for our village and for our, you know, residents. And I hope you'll come back, and at least for a Christmas party, you know, when we go back to them and visit them.
Yeah.
Because we really love what you did for us. Thank you so much.
And thank you. And for the first time in my life, I've actually found it enjoyable to work with an engineer. Jeff and I have gotten a lot accomplished, and he's taught me that it's not impossible to work with engineers. You know, at the end of the day, I've enjoyed working with him. We've gotten a lot accomplished, and the wheels move when
Good.
We get together.
Yeah.
And I have enjoyed that. And with my team, you know, they make it all happen. So, again, thank you very
well,
much.
Well, the beet juice was a winner.
And I'll miss
so,
you guys.
Yeah. And and to your lovely wife, thank you for allowing him to be here for 28 years. Thank you so much. And thank you. Yeah. Yeah, me too. Thanks, Jeff. Jeff, Mark. Good one. Oh, yeah. Okay. Then moving on, I'd like to know. Let's start with since Erica is out. Maybe Lisa. Do you mind? Just any public comments you have, and then if you can give us a little bit update on your liaison work that you're doing with Sustainability Commission, that would be great.
Sure. I guess my public comments, I just want to remind everybody that there is a Tour of Proviso bike event happening this Saturday, October 2nd at 10 a.m. All residents are encouraged to meet at the Broadview Fire Department at 9:30 a.m. for a 10 a.m. kickoff, and it will end at Keystone Park. So it's a 7-mile bike race, well, not race, bike
ride.
That is all about, you know, kind of togetherness, partnership, working with our neighboring villages. So please join us if you can.
Okay.
And then you want me to go straight into my, okay. So I'm going to be speaking about sustainability. And I did work with Eric Simon to make sure I was covering kind of all that they are doing. They are doing an amazing job. There has been a seamless transition of leadership to Eric Simon, who is the new head of the River Forest Sustainability Commission. I believe that he was here at our last meeting. His passion for and background in green energy is key for us right now, given the continuation of the MC Squared Community Aggregation Program, the launch of the Community Solar Clearinghouse Solution Program, and the installation of an electric charging station at Village Hall. He will have the support of two new commissioners that I think you might have already met, too, mm-hmm. with professional experience specifically in green energy. Maggie Clancy joins. She works at a company that makes green-powered school buses. So I know she's been talking to Dominican about going green on that front, also Trinity. And then Jeff Beasy is director at Invenergy Limited, which makes green energy solutions, wind and solar. The village's biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions right now is electricity from brown energy and natural gas. Switching to green energy on both fronts will go a long way to achieving 50% reduction in emissions by 2030
mm-hmm.
when compared to 2005 levels, which is what we have committed to already with the Chicago Climate Charter and the Greenest Region Compact. Key priorities for the next quarter is to kind of keep the momentum going. The team is going to launch the aforementioned CS2 program, which is the Community Solar Clearinghouse Solution Program. Both Jeff and Sarah will be key to that. VBOT, you guys, we all approved the required resolution at the last meeting, and the team is moving forward with next steps. Installation of the electric vehicle charging station. I'm really excited about that. The fact that we got that covered by a grant is amazing. I'd also like to see us move toward the acquisition of our first electric vehicle. In speaking with Jeff, it sounds like the best would probably be a public works vehicle or an administration vehicle, you know, kind of per the natural life cycle of when we replace cars. Love to get into the police car game too. They are doing those are a little bit expensive, so we might have to wait until the cost of police cars come down, but I think electric vehicles is in our future, particularly given the size of our village in terms of square, you know, kind of square miles. The team is continuing to do community outreach. Beth Chang is very focused on enhanced messaging that is simple, because we do a lot. So how does the commission make it easy for our community to understand and to act? Part of that is working on all of the different options for green energy. There are a lot of them. There's a lot of them that the village supports. There's a lot of them that a lot of companies, for-profit companies, are, you know, kind of mailing our residents about. So kind of trying to make that easy is key. We are thankful for the River Forest email that goes out every week, as well as Facebook and Instagram pages, which really do work well for us. We are still working to enhance our measurement of River Forest sustainability programs on our, you know, kind of greenhouse gas emissions. Shannon Roberts, who actually does this for a living through Deloitte & Touche, is helping us. We used to get a lot of our data from Planet Green, yeah, but we're trying to kind of get our own data directly from ComEd and the like, and we'll be working with the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, who has offered up help for all of our, you know, the folks in all the towns in the Chicagoland area to do more on that front. So once we kind of can have the breakthrough with regard to the access to the data we need, it should be a recurring, you know, it should be very easy to kind of to update on a regular basis. We are a little bit behind, but are going to be moving forward with the soliciting applications for student commissioners for this year. The program has been successful in the past. Students were key to the River Forest Tree Trails, which we featured this month for a fall activity for our residents. Veg Out, which is a, you know, encouraging our residents to eat less meat during the week, and then River Forest reduces waste. We are also working on the wastewater contract, the survey that I believe has been sealed. You fielded. We need to encourage all residents to please respond to that survey, as it's key. The more that we hear from our residents, the more that we can understand kind of what everybody needs and can address those needs. And last but not least, we as a village need to support and take action on the Chicago Regional Climate Action Plan. The Mayor's Metropolitan Caucus has asked for us to sign another, what they're calling the 2021 Climate Action Plan. They want us to support it via municipal resolution, so I'd ask the village, Lisa as Assistant Village Administrator, to put it on next month's agenda so that we can endorse what we will be doing as part of the Mayor's Metropolitan Caucus and all of our neighboring villages. And last but not least, we have Walk and Bike to School Week, which is October 4th through the 8th. And we have the 4th annual River Forest Pumpkin Smash at Roosevelt Middle School on November 6th. So lots going on. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. That's a lot going on and the commission. And thank you for being the liaison to that commission. Thank you. Brett?
Okay. Good. Good evening, everyone. I want to start off with on September the 15th, the River Forest Subcommittee and Collaboration met. I represented the village on this committee. And for those, as a refresher reminder, District 90, District 200, the River Forest Library, and the River Forest Township are all members of this collaboration. The first meeting basically was not only to introduce ourselves, but also to recap a little bit of what the committee is supposed to stand out, its missions, its goals. But we also focused mostly, at least in this first meeting, a recap of the COVID and the impact it has to each of our institutions. And we found out that there were a lot of similarities of how we approach this, and so that was good. Our next meeting is November the 3rd. At that meeting, each of the members are supposed to bring forth some agenda items so that we can work on as a collaborative. The other item, the West Central Municipal Conference dinner, the annual dinner was on September the 17th. Kathy, Bob, Lisa,
yeah.
and Sarah were there with me. It's more of a regional association, which is great. It's always great to catch up with our fellow villages and other administrators is there, so it's definitely a worthwhile event to go to. You know, it's a Friday, it's a little difficult, but it's good to go. The last thing that I attended was the Illinois Municipal League conference seminar. That was Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I know Kathy serves as the second vice president, soon to be the first vice president. For the IML, the good thing now is the IML is more of a statewide association, so we get more of a statewide presence. So thank you for that, Kathy. But the conference is definitely worthwhile. Topics, of course, being a lawyer, I focus more on the COEs for attorneys. So, but there are all types of topics that they're definitely worth attending. So. That's it, and the age-friendly committee did not meet since the last meeting, so we will by the time we get to the next meeting. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Rez. John, anything?
I'm good.
Can you come? Okay. Katie?
Thanks. I, too, want to thank and congratulate Mark Giannopoulos on his retirement. And in terms of my role with the village. Looking forward to our first meeting with Truth Racial Healing Transformation Group at Dominican next month. I've been having a monthly call with Precious Forrest, who's in charge of DEI at Dominican, and with Trustee Bachner. And I'm having a meeting with her, another person in her department, Amy Omi, this month. And that's it.
Thanks, Katie. Ken?
Okay, I'd like to say I hope that everyone's having, all the residents of River Forest are currently having a wonderful end of this summer, into the fall time. I also attended the Illinois Municipal League. I covered some of the sessions. I did enjoy it. With regard to my liaison abilities or what I do is for the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. I serve on that with, as chairperson, with myself, Erica Bachner, and Lisa. And, you know, we're the newest committee formed. That being the case, we're also the biggest. So we have approximately 40 members. And so, you know, we're slowly getting off the ground. We're actually excited about where we're headed. When we had our first meeting, it was to get to know everyone. We asked the committee, you know, what they wanted to do and what they wanted to see. And they're very, well, the first question was, you know, well, what is the Village of River Forest and what, you know, how do you exactly govern? And so we were lucky enough to have Lisa do a beautiful presentation on civics, the municipal government, and how it affects our population and how we're growing and how we get things done. And so that was a great background for the committee to see, you know, and try to encapsulate what we're trying to get accomplished. The second task that we have initially is to come up with definitions of the you know, which is probably the strongest issue and mission that we have, is to come up with a working definition of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So what we did in that area is we tasked obviously discussed it as a group. And then we tasked a subcommittee to come together and help us formulate definitions. That subcommittee brought back the definitions on the following meeting. We've discussed it even further. And now we're at the point where we expect to be able to ratify it at our next meeting, which is October 4th. And then we will present it to the board on the following Board of Trustees meeting. And then after that, it's our expectation that we will get about the business of DE&I and set goals and priorities and objectives and find ways to accomplish them.
Great. Thanks. Is that it, Ken?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Thank you so much. Yeah, a lot going on. So thank you. And it's a big committee. Bob?
Good evening. Again, I want to congratulate Mark. You know, I think a couple of interactions that I had with him were all really positive. And, you know, the Jeff's comment about the brine thing, that was that's a game changer in terms of expenses that the village has. So that if anything is his legacy, maybe that's his legacy. But congratulations to him and his family. As Rez and mentioned, attended the Metropolitan dinner a couple of Friday nights ago. I had an opportunity to attend two sessions at the IML on Saturday. One presented by our own Greg Smith, who presented effectively using TIF while addressing other affected taxing districts, navigating choppy waters. And if you want to learn a little bit about TIFs, if you're not really up to date on it, Greg's got a great PowerPoint presentation that hopefully he will share with the group. And then second presentation that I attended was planning and revitalizing your downtown streetscape. And they did a presentation on a case study for the city of Paxton, Illinois, which is a small town along I-57, but they've done some really cool things down there. And so it was really worth the time to spend a little bit of time, listening to that presentation. In my liaison role with the EDC, I was able to attend the first meeting under the leadership of Kyler Brown, and I'll share with you a couple of more items as we talk about, again, that liaison role that I have with the EDC. During the first meeting, there was a lot of conversation, and again, we onboarded several new members to the EDC. And one of the things that they asked for was a summary of all the recent activities of the EDC going back for a period of time. And I believe Lisa and the staff were preparing a summary for that for all the EDC members so that we can have a fruitful conversation and prioritize the needs of the community and give the EDC a little bit of a jumping off board onto some approaches and some projects to attack. There's a special EDC meeting this Thursday, and that will be to kind of level set on all the projects that, again, have gone on in the past. Another thing that the EDC will be doing is they're going to be moving their meetings to Monday evenings, opposite of Monday evening where the village board is meeting. So that schedule will be forthcoming. And then the last thing that I have is, you know, on two of the properties that we have, we've had some tenants and developers looking seriously at the LFS building on Madison Street, and Lake and Park, the developer is still in discussions with a tenant, and hopefully will be coming forward to bring us some proposals in the next few months. So that's it from the EDC and my comments for this evening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
What do I do, mute?
Okay, hopefully there's no feedback. Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. And thanks for the lot going on in economic development. So thank you for that update. Just a couple of repeats. Thank you, Lisa, for, talking about the Tour de Proviso. This is a great event for us here in River Forest. This is, again, a partnership with Broadview, Bellwood, Maywood, Riverside, and Melrose Park. And we're just super excited over the fact that the bike ride is going to end here in River Forest and at our Keystone Park. So a nice place to, kind of celebrate coming together as a, surrounding community. So very happy to be part of that and to have a sponsorship in it. A couple things. I, too, went to the West Conference dinner. Yeah. Oh my God, I can't even think who they are anymore. West Central Municipal Conference dinner. It was really nice. It's always nice to, be with colleagues around the table, not only our own, but the surrounding communities. It's a great dinner with many municipalities that come, and so a lot of mayors, trustees, administrators that join us. So it's nice to be with them in a casual setting. So that was a very nice event. I also attended the Illinois Municipal League, and I'm very flattered and pleased to tell you that I was elected into the first vice president role, which is a really big thing because it puts us, River Forest, in a leadership role where, the Illinois Municipal League, it represents, nearly 1,300 municipalities across the state of Illinois, almost all right. municipalities, actually, just with maybe a few that might be a holdout because they're just simply too small. So, it's a fairly, prestigious organization, and they do a lot for us, and they do a lot for municipalities. They educate. That was what the conference was all about, is education and roundtables. I hosted a roundtable for all the mayors, and it was quite good. We got a chance as mayors to talk about COVID and the recovery of COVID, and, of course, the Delta strain. So there's many things that, that the mayors are dealing with these days. And then, of course, just the overall advocacy that they do for us, for this within the state legislature. So we're really happy about that. Also, I don't know if you realize, but the governor just did sign the remap, which has a little bit of effect in River Forest. We are lucky, and we're probably unique. We are unique in that we have two of the leaders represent River Forest. I don't think there's another municipality that has two leaders in Senator President Harmon has the north end of River Forest as a senator, and Camille Lilly. And then we have Speaker Walsh, who represents us on the south end of River Forest, along with Kimberly Lightfoot, the majority leader of the Senate. So we have a lot of big guns in our community, and we're real grateful for that. And we plan to continue to work with those leaders as they begin, the veto session coming up, and then going back into the regular session of the legislature. So, we need to take advantage of having that great leadership. And then last, along the lines of sustainability, I and Vicki Skaman, the mayor of Oak Park, were named co-chair with the Community Foundation Advisory Group and Planet Green to kind of take that role on, basically for the advisory. It's called the Community Foundation Advisory Group. It's basically a group of advisors under the Community Foundation Board, and I've been on it forever. I led the Leadership Lab as a co-chair. So we're moving, Vicki and I are going to move over to sustainability. So I'm really excited about that because there's lots to be done with climate change and climate action plan that we've both are committed to. So that's all I have. So let's move on to the consent agenda. If I can have a trustee move the consent agenda A through I and second it.
I'd like to move that we approve the consent agenda items A through I.
Okay, can I ask a question? I'd like to have an item pulled. Do I do it now or do I wait?
Yeah, no, do it now.
Okay, I'd like to have item I pulled, please.
Item I, okay. So, thank you. So if I can get are you okay with that, Ken?
Yes, I am.
Consent A through H?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and then I didn't hear a second yet. So.
Second.
Okay. Okay, so any questions on item A through H? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to please take the vote.
We should read them in the record.
And read them into the record, of course.
Okay. A, Village Board of Trustee Meeting Minutes, September 13th, 2021. B, Right-of-Way Encroachment Waiver and Agreement for an Irrigation System located at 801 Clinton Place. C, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 806 Jackson Avenue. D, proclamation designating October 2021 as Hispanic Heritage Month proclamation. E, proclamation designating October 2021 as Italian American Heritage Month proclamation. F, award of contract to Greenways to Go for purchase and installation of an electric vehicle charging station with a net cost of $14,827.80. G, award of contract extension Vicarious Multimedia for communications consulting services in the amount of $5,200. H, award of contract extension with GovTemps USA for temporary employment services at a cost not to exceed $15,561. Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Motion passes. All right, then if I could get a motion and a second on item 5I, and then we can talk about your question.
Okay. I move to approve the village administrative report September 27, 2021.
Second.
Okay.
So this just falls under the small points department. In the schedule of meetings, they still have the EDC listed as Friday morning at 7:30 a.m. So, Lisa, if you could just have that updated. So, thank you. That was all I had.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. There's a special board meeting.
Yeah, there's a special EDC meeting on the 30th. So, the way it works, because the schedule was already adopted, is the meetings that are on the regular calendar will be canceled, and then the meetings that are scheduled in accordance with the new calendar until 2022 will be considered special meetings. So we'll go ahead and clean all of that up on the website as well. So thanks, Bob.
Great.
I appreciate
you. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions on the village administrator's report? Hearing none, if you could please read it into the record and then take the vote.
All right. Village administrator's report. Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Okay. We have nothing for six. No recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. So let's move on to unfinished business. I see that we have both Kyle and Mark on the Zoom call here, so I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to the Sedgwick Properties group. After there. Hello? Mark, Kyle.
How's that?
Yep. Video.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me? All right, very good. And that, good evening, everybody. Sorry if I missed any early questions, but we do have an update for this week, or this month. We continue to have 50% sales. We have no additional sales, I believe, since the last reporting or last board meeting, but we did actually have one of our highest number of inquiry weeks this week. So traffic continues and interest continues to be good. Have just not had any new contracts to move forward. On a residential unit side. On a retail progress side, we have one retailer that's in the final stages of signing lease agreement. Two others are in an LOI stage. One is the restaurant, one is MedTail. So good progress on that. And then we have received at least two lender term sheets. And continue our dialogue with the lender or with lenders to try to finalize getting to the construction loan. And on a housekeeping side, we realized we had some delays with this, but we did get the weeds addressed in both on the public way and on the site. We've tidied up the fence, zip tied the vinyl panels. Also cut down bushes. I believe we've also put a site fence as well as mesh on the Ashland side to limit any view that there would be in there. So again, everything had already been cut down. So so that the site should be in good shape here, and we'll continue to keep an eye on it, especially ahead of the cooler months ahead. But that's all I have this evening.
actually have a quick question.
Yes, sure, Ken.
Mark, just a question for you, please. You know, one of the residents asked, is there a procedure when you do begin construction, do you let the resident, the surrounding residents know, or what's, you know, how will they be aware of, you know, louder noises at times or anything like that? Is there a procedure that you have?
Well, I believe the village also has procedures. I remember some time ago talking to them about the protocol, but our construction team will reach out to, I believe, Jeff Loster and coordinate any communications that are needed. At a minimum, we need about a 10 to 15 day window to get the first trade mobilized, which is excavation. So during that 10 to 15 day window, we can certainly be having communications with the village and certainly notifying any neighbors and any activity that's forthcoming.
Yeah, so we can also utilize the existing microsite for continued construction updates once construction commences. We typically advise that the contractor, that the project manager reach out to the neighboring property owners to give them an idea of who they can call if they have issues with construction, and then certainly staff is always available.
Okay. And just to, we did send an email to Phyllis. Maybe you can, because I know you had some technical problems. But.
Yeah. I apologize. I did send an email to Phyllis earlier this evening to try to address the questions that she submitted ahead of time for the questions she posed tonight. I apologize. I did resend it when I realized that she hadn't received it. And so not to repeat anything that Kyle already said, but just to touch on the point, I'm sorry, Mark, the points that Phyllis raised that I don't think Mark addressed were with regard to the permits that are on the website. They're not mentioned, I guess, specifically by name, but there are updates that talk about the MWRD watershed permit. And so we talk about the MWRD permit, but it's a watershed permit that they have applied for and received. There was also a demolition permit early on in the process. There were separate permits for AT&T, ComEd, and Comcast when the utilities were relocated on the site. But in terms of the construction of the new building, it's we literally internally call it a new construction permit, and that is what they have applied for. So when we talk about the village permit, what we're really talking about is the new construction permit. So I can clean some of that up just to make sure it's very clear on the website. So people understand, you know, kind of our vernacular and what we mean when we talk about those things. I'm not sure what Phyllis meant by the removal of the RDA on the website. We haven't taken anything off of the website, so I'll follow up with her and see if I can get some clarification on what she means so we can answer that question. Yeah. Very good.
Mark, this is Katie. Thanks for being here tonight, and thanks for your information. Can you also give us an update on... Well, Lisa gave an update on what the permits are, but can you give us an update on where you stand with the permits? Have they all been issued? Have you are you ready to go on the permitting side? And are you just waiting for the lender negotiations and to get your loan right now? What's holding you up?
Yes, all issues on the permit side, Lisa can confirm, but have been addressed. We're not sitting on any open issues right now, to my knowledge. Permit is ready to be issued. The permit, however, has always been contemplated as coming with the construction loan. So that's we'd be looking to obtain that permit as we get the construction finance.
Okay. And are you able to give us an estimated time frame for getting the loan, the financing?
I don't know that I have a time frame at this point. We're trying everything we can to get it done ASAP as soon as we possibly can. We want to get the excavation activity going as quickly as possible. And we have both the contractor, general contractor, and excavator all lined up. So once that's resolved, we're, like I said, within 10 days of having site activity.
Okay, thanks. I don't know if you had a chance, if you were given a copy of the resident's question, she had a list of questions for you earlier tonight. But one of the things she asked was whether, rather than us reaching out to you to continue to ask for questions, if you have an update, you know, if you could affirmatively reach out to us and show up at, like you did today, meeting, but if there's another update before the next meeting, rather than just coming once a month, if you're able to come, if you have an update or more information to give us, could you come, you know, at, to the next village board meeting, even though it's not perhaps the one in a month that you're planning on coming to?
Yeah, I believe the next one is on October 11th. So yes, if Lisa were to let us know there are either specific questions we needed to address or we reach a critical milestone, yeah, we don't necessarily need to wait that to the end of October. We can certainly do an update in that mid-October timeframe if that makes sense.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mark and Kyle. Again, I think many of these issues will be updated on the website. Continue to be updated on the website. So. I encourage all.
All right, very good. Appreciate the
Mark,
the Zoom opportunity. Yeah.
Hey, Mark.
Go ahead.
If not. Oh, okay. Yep. We're done. All right.
All right. Thank you. Good
Thanks,
night.
Mark. All right. Let's move on to discussion and direction on the creation of the sewer lateral repair. There's no motion here, just a discussion. So, is there?
Yep.
There's a motion.
Oh, we want. Oh, you guys want direction? You want. I thought we were just.
Well, we can do a discussion and direction. We can always.
I mean, I didn't see where we're going to approve something. That's up to the board, but I thought we were just going to have a discussion.
And we certainly can. The idea was to try to kind of start to narrow up that discussion so that we can start to put a policy together that we would then bring back to the board for ultimate approval or modification at that time. But okay. We don't want to start going down a path that the board doesn't necessarily agree with either.
Yeah, I think right now we'll just have, unless somebody around the table tells me differently, I don't know if we're prepared because we haven't heard it yet.
Right.
Okay. Well, just to kind of start back at the beginning, and I'll make it brief, earlier this summer we were made aware of a couple of sewer laterals that had failed and were causing a small sinkhole in the roadway, really a pavement depression. Just to make sure we're all on the same page, sewer lateral is considered the sewer pipe that goes from a building out to this village's sewer main in the street. So the lateral is just kind of the quote-unquote private section of the sewer. The associated property owners that were, impacted by these failing laterals were made aware of the issue in accordance with the village's current sewer lateral policy. Current lateral policy is that any property owner who has a failing sewer lateral is responsible for the repair or replacement of that sewer lateral. That's from their building all the way out to the main. That's our current policy. Through that conversation, staff was asked to do some research, figure out what other communities are doing in this regard, and to essentially find out what our options are if we were to move away from our current policy. So we reached out to 19 different communities in the area, with 13 of them responding. 8 of those 13 communities have a policy that is essentially the same or very similar to the village's current policy, where the property owner is responsible for the lateral from the building out to the main. 3 of the 13 responding communities take ownership of the sewer lateral repairs only within the footprint of the roadway. So anything in the parkway would still be the property owner's responsibility. And again, of those 13 communities that responded, 2 of them take ownership of any repairs that are needed anywhere within the public right-of-way. So typically the property line is right around the back side of the sidewalk. So from there all the way out to the sewer main, which is typically in the middle of the roadway, those two of those 13 communities take ownership of that entire stretch. To provide a little bit of context, the village has approximately 3,000 sewer laterals. We don't have great records on sewer laterals because they've been considered private infrastructure to date, so we kind of have to use what we can. We compared it with building footprints in our GIS system and cross-referenced that with water main accounts, typically a water service, typically one sewer lateral per water service. So 3,000 is the approximate number we're dealing with. And as I mentioned here, typically to dig in the roadway, one repair is typically about $10,000 to $15,000 a piece. What staff is looking at is essentially creating a subsidy program. We have the lead service line replacement subsidy program now, as well as the sewer backflow subsidy program. So what we would be looking at is creating a new subsidy program along these lines to help cover the cost of some portion of a sewer lateral repair within some portion of the roadway per the board's direction. We would certainly have to hammer out maintenance responsibilities, who is the responsible party for finding the damage, caps on reimbursements, reimbursement rates, 50%, 75%, things like that. But basically, we would try to formulate that program very similar to the other subsidy programs that we have to just kind of create a suite of these reimbursement programs that are all very consistent across the board. And then we also kind of noted in here that there are some insurance coverages that folks can get either through their current homeowners policy or just through standalone third-party vendors that I know NICOR has one. And I found one more online the other day in searching that they're not hard to find, but they have varying rates and costs associated with them. So there are options out there, but certainly want to make sure that the board is aware that if we were to make, you know, village ownership or shared ownership part of the program, we would want to maintain a similar track that we have with our other subsidy program. So we were just looking for direction from the board as to whether or not we move forward in creating a program like that, or if we want to take this in a different direction.
Hey, Jeff, it's Bob. One of the questions I had was, which I don't know was addressed, or if you need to do a little bit of homework on, or if we need to have some more discussion on it. You know, the one thing that seemed to be a really big issue, forget about the money part, was the timing issue of getting that work done on Monroe. And, you know, we still have a very short time frame. And as we all know, trying to get contractors in our homes, it's virtually impossible to get somebody to react that quickly. So could we think about or have a discussion about a stopgap on how we might take care of that? Because again, I think some of the residents on Monroe represented that it'd be weeks before, you know, contractors could get out and do that work. And then obviously after we got involved, it was done within a matter of days. So can we have some discussion around what that might look like and how we might address that issue? And then we can talk further about the money.
I can, yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on which way you're thinking in terms of the policy that you want to propose. But either way, you're right. I mean, you know, there's ways that we can help the residents move it along quicker. But I think if, let me make sure I got this right, Jeff. You said out of the 13, three is responsible for from the curb to the lateral, and two was responsible from all the way into the public right away, and then eight, you know, was the property owner. Did I get that right?
Correct.
So the question that we need to kind of talk through, and you're right, regardless of which one we choose, you know, we have to make sure that we help the residents, because many times, as I think I was talking to others, many times they don't know what to do. I mean, they don't know what contractor to, you know, talk to, or what's a reasonable price, and so forth. So I agree. But before we can get to that, I mean, where is everyone's head in terms of where you want the policy to be? And there's a cost associated, of course, and I guess that's the next question. What is the cost associated with those three options?
Sure. Like I said, digging in the roadway, if there's one lateral that needs to be repaired, you're typically going to run between $10,000 and $15,000. Those two on Monroe, I think those both came in, and you get a little more bang for your buck because you're digging on two sites at you know, one mobilization. You get a little savings there to fix two pieces of damage. But I think that bill came in right around $17,000. So obviously you kind of divide that in two, you're at eight and change. So you see some savings,
Jeff,
there.
Can I just stop you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
When you say $17,000, is that all the way including the property owner's property and the roadway?
That was the cost of the work, the restoration, the whole thing.
But so that was to the curb.
Do all of that. And yes, I'm sorry, I should clarify. So to replace that pipe up to the curb line was $17,000 and change.
So that would be, if you chose that would be kind of the ideal.
You're probably, even though that was two, one is probably approaching that number anyways. You're getting up to 12, 13, 14, 15, I would imagine. We did just get two permits in last week that were just for single kind of point repairs within the parkway, obviously a little cheaper than digging in the roadway. Your restoration is much less. Those were both around $6,000 to $8,000 a piece. So there's a little context between the parkway and the roadway. And then obviously anything within private property, you know, I guess the village could still choose to help do, you know, some sort of subsidy on private property, but that would just be the, you know, in the same ballpark as the $6,000 to $8,000 at the parkway. So those are your approximate costs.
Okay.
Have there been any discussions on like proactive things we can do, or is it because of where it's located, it just you find out when you find out, or?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we televise our sewer main, so we kind of run the camera down and we can see where laterals connect to the main. That's a very brief look at what's going on. Sometimes you can see things starting to go at that connection point, but there's no way to know how long that could still last or if it's been like that for 20 years. So until these things kind of rear their ugly heads, a lot of times we as the village don't know that, because short of getting a camera down the lateral, you don't ever really get eyes on the whole thing and establish what might be damaged in it.
Jeff, is there any relationship between the condition of the road or the use of the road as it relates to these laterals?
Good question. Not necessarily. There's no rhyme or reason. I mean, a lot of these sewer laterals and even our sewer mains are old clay tile pipes that have been in the ground for decades upon decades. They're generally deep enough where heavier traveled roads don't necessarily translate to damaged pipes everywhere. I mean, 1400 Monroe, we've got a couple that failed there, but they were right next to each other. That, to me, would be more of an indication that either whoever put those two connections in probably did them at the same time, maybe didn't do a great job, or because the two of them came into the main very close to each other, sacrificed the structural integrity of the main itself just to make those connections. And so now you kind of increase the risk of something completely collapsing there. So, you know, that said, there was nothing else on the 1400 block of Monroe that we noticed that you know, required repair. So, no, there really isn't a great rhyme or reason to that.
But Jeff, during that conversation, wasn't there some mention of some issues on the 1500 block of Monroe also? Am I mistaken? Didn't someone refer to a sinkhole on the 1500 block?
I mean, there certainly are from time to time. I think there's one on a block of Ashland, a random block of Ashland that I can't recall right now. They crop up from time to time. There very well could be one on the 1500 block in a row. I don't recall that. You know, they occur, and we try to treat them as we notice them. If pavement depression starts to form, now we can start investigating, but shy of something visible for us to notice, we don't really have a great reason to start digging into sewer laterals and having folks kind of get a plumber to come out and televise their lines either.
I was just going to ask John from a real estate standpoint, I mean, is there, you know, again, if, how do we even, I think you're going at that, Ken, is how do we even know that there could be a problem? Is there inspections that happen? Like, do you require, you know, just like you inspect the house, you say you have to inspect your lateral to the main? And if so, does a report come out like once you buy a home or you sell a home?
Well, it's completely up to the buyer whether or not they do the inspection. Typically, they do these days because everybody Googles what are you supposed to do when you buy a house. And
right.
Your sewer scope is part of that. It's about $150 to get somebody to put a camera down it, depending on the length from your access point to the street where it meets. Typically, what happens is they send you a video of the entire thing and they narrate it if they see some issues or problems, and then they negotiate that with the seller in terms of who's responsible.
John, so you would say the average new resident, you know, they obviously everyone goes through a real estate contract and then they get an inspection. From my experience, you know, that hasn't been that they all, you know, even seek that out. So you're saying that generally you found that they all pay that extra $150?
It's something new. It's okay. Becoming more prevalent. And it's recommended by a lot of inspectors because all the homes were built 80 to 120 years ago.
And they're clay.
And maybe that's part of the education we need to give the residents because, that's new to me. That I do a lot of closings and everything, and I don't see them requesting that division.
Oh, really?
So.
Yeah, because this is a tough one. If they do the, you know, an inspection and they find that there's, you know, it's a clay sewer and chances are it could deteriorate, or what are the causes? I mean, other than deterioration and
root, it's called infiltration and inflow.
Tree roots can be one, and then indirectly, if you're constantly getting somebody out to rod tree roots out, you're constantly kind of beating up on the inside of the pipe too. So if something's a little bit weaker in one particular spot, just root clearing can also create some damage. A lot of the times we see not necessarily complete failure, but that the connection at the main just kind of falls off. That's not always supported very well. That's what we ran into up on the 1400 block of Monroe. Again, we've got 3,000 some sewer laterals here in town. They're not all collapsing at once either. So it's not, you know, portions of town were built around the same time. We don't have big groups of them all failing together. It really just kind of does seem to be a random occurrence. If we could certainly attribute that to any one particular thing, heavily trafficked roads or anything else, we would certainly try to prevent that or stave that off to some degree. But there really just doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it at this point, at least not that we've noticed.
So then the question kind of comes back to, you know, what do we want to do? Because if you look at, you know, because we know we have two replaced, the 2,998 left to do, that's a big number. And so, you know, I don't know that any of us want to take on that kind of liability over time. And so what's the most equitable thing for the residents? And, you know, any resident who gets a bill for anything is going to be upset, but, you know, it's the reality of owning a home. So I think, you know, where do we want to land in terms of, you know, I would be in favor of some kind of cost sharing, you know, with a cap on it based on a recommendation from Jeff. But that's kind of where I'd like to take it.
Jeff, I've got a couple of questions for you.
Yeah, hang on, Katie, 1 minute, if you don't mind, just 1 second. So maybe you said this, and just off of Bob, what he said. Is the 8 that you said it was the property owners, did they have a cost-sharing program?
Yeah, sorry. So I didn't want to drill into that too much and put everybody to sleep. Of those 13 communities that responded to us, 8 of them have a policy that's the same as River Forest right now, where the property owner is responsible all the way out to the main. Yes. But of those 8 who have that policy, 3 of them offer some form of shared bidding where they'll kind of try to provide basically a unit price, if you will, mm-hmm. That the homeowners can then come and take advantage of. So that was 3 of those 8. And then actually that was it. Of those 8 that had that policy, there were just 3 that had some sort of kind of offset, if you will.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, sure. Katie. I'm sorry.
Jeff, in your materials, you had in there that we typically have 1 or 2 of these a year. And then you had that this number is expected to rise if Village takes more ownership over, or maybe if Village responsibilities are increased. And I was wondering why that is. When you said there are 1 or 2 of these a year, were you saying that those are the Village is already responsible for those 1 or 2 a year, or residents are?
Currently residents are. So yeah, very small number right now that we're currently dealing with. With that being said, since this initial conversation started back in June or July earlier this summer, Mark left already, but between the two of us, we've received more inquiries about the Village's sewer lateral policy in the last 2.5 months than I think I have in the last 8 years here. So there's definitely a level of interest. And you know, to be fair, if the Village is considering some sort of cost sharing, I think that drives the interest up. So, you know, to put it another way, we had a small handful of folks that replaced the lead water service last year. We're already at 20 this year, thereabouts, because we now have a lead service line replacement program. So I think just by sheer nature of, you know, changing the responsibility and taking some of that off the property owners, and if some sort of cost sharing were to be involved as well, I think it's safe to say that that would drive the numbers up, especially.
So, are you thinking that if we offer this cost sharing program, residents might be thinking about doing this prophylactically, even if it doesn't necessarily have to be done at that moment as an emergency?
I think so. And what I was going to say is, I think especially once you get some of the contractors that have repeat business here in town, and if there is a program available, you know, it's to their advantage as well to kind of advertise that to homeowners if they're out doing routine maintenance, and, you know, maybe see something that isn't necessarily catastrophic, but, you know, now there's an opportunity to help get ahead of it. that's not the worst thing in the world, because now we're, you know, potentially preventing sinkholes and safety issues. But I do think all those things point to an increased number.
But I would add, Bill, I mean, we're just not going to replace it to replace it. I'm not going to replace it something looks like it's going to or is about, you know, separating from the main. I mean, you know, we're just like, so the fear that, you know, there's going to be this rush on, you know, contractors coming, I would think we can control that.
Yeah, and I don't want to imply that, you know, it's going to be a mad dash and we're all going to run out of money immediately or anything like that. You know, 1 to 2 might creep up to 3, 4, 5, something in that realm. I don't know until we put some sort of program together.
I would think we would want to put a criteria on anything, regardless of what we choose. You know, I mean, well, if we choose it, the residence policy, then we don't care.
Right.
Yeah, qualification.
Certainly.
It has to be, you can't just say, you know, I'm fearful that this is going to happen.
Of course. And one of the bullet points that we put in here, just kind of putting our thoughts together on what the program criteria would need to entail. One of them is that this is only covering some sort of structural damage to the pipe, a missing pipe section, a collapsed pipe section, the connection has fallen off the main, something like that.
Right.
Sometimes you get a connection that falls off 30%. It's still functional, but you probably need to give that some attention.
Right.
If there's money available, that might change a homeowner's, you know, process.
Yeah. I have a question. Jeff, if with all of these types of replacements, are the damages usually from curb to main, or is it like 50%, you know, on the property owners, including the sidewalk, I guess? How would you say? I guess I'm trying to see what the potential impact would be if we were to say today, hey, let's go with curb to main, the village would take it, and then the property owner is responsible for the other side of it.
Sure. And I don't have a great answer for you. What I will tell you is that, you know, those permits, we don't split those permits out. So we would have to dig back however many years we need to go back and look at each of those plumbing with digging permits to see where exactly the work was taking place. We don't get a lot in the roadway. We don't. We got 2 in the parkway last week alone. It just is kind of, and both of those were from the same contractor, I'd point out. So maybe that's unrelated. Maybe it has to do with a certain process that they have, that they're inspecting things more, but we can certainly dig into that. I don't have a great answer for you on that right now.
And then my next question is, on your cost sharing, is it because you're going with the current policy of the property owner all the way to Maine being responsible, and then we just help the property owner in that respect? Or if we were to say the village is responsible curb to main, would you still be recommending the cost sharing with the resident?
I'm sorry, I don't follow.
Okay. I'm saying if we were to say, if the village says we're responsible from the curb to the main, so we're paying that. And your recommendation is saying, proposing a cost sharing with the resident, would you still be recommending cost sharing to the village board if the village was to take responsibility from the curb to the main?
The only, and I'll try to take a stab at this, I think I know
okay.
where you're going. The only utility or the only private infrastructure within the public right of way that the village currently gets involved with is water service. Right. So we own from the water main up to the Buffalo Box, which is typically in the parkway. But we own that. We maintain that because we need to access that Buffalo Box to shut off water if there's a leak or for, you know, non-payment or something like that. Everything else, the driveway apron, a carriage walk, sprinkler systems, and up until potentially now sewer service, those are all considered private infrastructure within the public right of way that the village does not do any sort of, you know, take full ownership of. Curb and sidewalk program will let folks replace their driveway apron, take advantage of the village's unit pricing, but the property owner still has to pay that bill. So to answer your question, I would still think that to be consistent, at most we would want to do some sort of cost sharing because it is still private infrastructure within the public right of way, and taking full ownership of that to some degree is just not consistent with anything else that we really have right now.
Okay. I guess I was only reacting because back in June when those residents were here, they were giving us their research about the villages being responsible only from the curb to the main. and that's what they were proposing we do. So that's why I'm trying to follow up with that theme if we're going in that direction. Then.
And certainly
and
one of the options.
What I also understood is, maybe they didn't say it this way, but I understood they were going to take, they would pay up to the curb, their property to the curb, and they expect the village to pay from the curb to the main. So I thought that's what was the direction we were heading. So.
And that certainly is an option. Wouldn't need to put a program together along those lines, obviously. The
right.
village would just take ownership from the curb out and the homeowner on the other side. So that is another option.
And by the way, I'm not saying we have to do that. I'm just trying to ask when you propose the shared reimbursement option, it sounded like that was because we were making the property owner responsible all the way to the main, and therefore that's why we were proposing to consider sharing.
No, that wasn't in response to any previous discussions like that.
Okay.
So Jeff, just to clarify that, was your recommendation for cost sharing covering the entire right-of-way or only the roadway portion?
The recommendation was for cost sharing only within the roadway.
Gotcha. And that would be consistent with, there were three of the other villages that you asked. That's their policy, three out of the five.
Correct.
Well,
three of the 13.
Yeah, or three of the eight and then three.
Okay, right.
Of the 13,
three of the five who take ownership to some degree in the right of way. Yes, three of them.
Yes,
right.
That would
yes that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah, we agree. So
okay.
I think I understand it now. So
okay.
Your proposal is to cost share from
within the roadway
to the,
okay.
the main.
Okay. Okay.
And I think that's what Bob said, right?
Okay.
So go ahead, Lisa.
I was just going to ask one question in terms of the occurrences per year. And I'm like, so what? If you look at your chart, you basically, we are on the low side. Is that just because the size of our village or our infrastructure is better? Or
I can't imagine
difference?
It's because our infrastructure is better. Not that there's anything wrong with our infrastructure. Ours isn't newer. It's not, there's nothing fancy about it. It's, you know, sewers that went in back in the day, they all went in the same way. Perhaps it's because we don't have any kind of cost sharing right now. And so people are less inclined to, you know, do some of those more proactive repairs where things aren't completely collapsing on them yet. Perhaps it is because we just have a smaller number of residents and property owners here in town. I don't know what the rhyme or reason is. I know one of the communities, I want to say it was West Chicago, only saw a small handful of these in a given year. I'm sorry, it was Elmhurst. There were Elmhurst and Glen Ellen, 3 to 10, 5 to 10 in a given year. So not crazy numbers there. And you know, obviously Elmhurst is a big community. So we don't know. We don't know how many we're going to see. We don't know if that number is going to change. I assume based on my experience that the number will increase to some degree. We don't know. We really don't.
So let me ask a question along. I guess Ken kind of touched on it, and maybe this is a big part of whatever program or policy we end up with, and that's education, as Ken was saying. You know, part of it is they, you know, residents know where to go. They don't know who to contact, and maybe Bob touched on this too. You know, if we can help the resident know what how big the problem is, where to go, who to contact, like you said, you know, we might even have negotiated unit pricing. That's better than if they went on their own.
Sure.
And all that, I would think, mm-hmm. unless I'm hearing something different from the trustees,
no.
would all have to be part of this policy right. and program.
Certainly. We currently, for lead service line replacement programs, a great example because we just obviously adopted that earlier
right.
this year, and we've got it's new to us, it's new to residents. And
right.
so we've been helping residents try to find contractors, try to answer questions. I mean, with everything else we do, we're trying to help them out as much as we can. Certainly, we could put lists of contractors together and try to help residents out in that regard. We always point folks to our list of currently licensed contractors here in town. Establishing the scope of exactly what is wrong with their sewer line is difficult unless they can get a private contractor out, because that private contractor ultimately has to come in from their house or from a clean out on private property in order to see what the damage is.
The only thing that's kind of is still in my head a little bit, and what John said, if they spend $150 to get this inspected, and they do see, you know, a
an issue. I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, at that point in time buying the house, I mean, it's, they're taking the responsibility of buying that problem. And so, I don't know. I struggle with that a little bit. Kind of, it's like, well, now it's our problem. I don't know if you guys get any thoughts on that.
Well, I think it would, the degree of the problem is probably what's most important.
Right.
And also, they're, the main thing that a buyer's concerned with is what is their responsibility. And if we're pretty clear in terms of what the village's responsibility is as it relates to the homeowner, then that scope, you know, would have to be evaluated by somebody, and you would have to qualify it or not qualify it, you know. If somebody just said it was, you know, it's not in great shape, but it's functional, you know, within a contract that we use in the state, if it's working as it's intended, then it's, you're good. It doesn't have to be new.
Right.
All it has to be is working as it was intended.
And if I could just offer an observation, when people buy single-family homes, they'll often get radon tests to see if the basement has an unsafe level of radon gas naturally occurring. And if there is a level of radon in the basement when you're buying a home that's higher than the suggested level, there's often negotiations between the buyer and seller over purchase price, credits, and things like that. To, because it's a financial deal, you can get consideration to make the repair. Similarly, if there was a really bad lateral line that was discovered through a residential real estate closing, that could become part of the economics of the deal, so the buyer is actually getting the benefit of that foreknowledge and not feeling like they bought a house with this problem that was undisclosed or unknown prior to it.
Right.
Jeff, just a follow-up question. Again, on the roadway and then the entire right-of-way, is your recommendation right now that the village 100% of the cost of any repairs that need to be done in the roadway, and the resident cover 100% of any repairs that need to be done from the curb to the house, or that the village is sharing part of the cost for the roadway?
The latter. So the proposal as it stands is that the village would split up to a cap of $7,500. The village would do a 50-50 share for repair, structural repairs within the roadway. Anything out, you know, behind the curb, under the sidewalk, or in the front yard would then be 100% property owner responsibility. That's the way it's current, this proposal is currently written.
Got it, thank you.
Sure.
Well, let me ask then the village trustees, are you prepared to vote on this tonight? Because it sounds like we're kind of circling around what Jeff and Lisa and others have come, so we can move a motion in second.
So it would be to give staff direction to write it up and bring it back.
Bring it back. So
exactly.
What you, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could call on the trustees if you wanted to. President Ducey, if you have a consensus, then staff can just bring back it.
I think it sounds like we're getting the consensus, unless any one of the trustees tell me different. But I think I'm hearing a consensus.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear what Greg said. I'm sorry. I didn't hear what Greg said.
You just said if we were getting consensus, then we'll ask Jeff to bring it back for a vote.
Thank you.
As an official program.
Yeah. Okay. Is that okay, Bob? I don't know if you guys can hear us. Can you hear us, Bob? All right. So, okay. So that's what it sounds like.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. All right. So I think that ends, we have no new business, and so we do have to go into executive session. So if we can go.
Sure. I move to enter into executive session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the village and its employees or its representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, litigation involving the village that is pending, and the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Yeah, there will be no other.
Oh, okay.
We have to call the vote to adjourn.
Yes, please.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Okay,